Great. Applause at the beginning is always a bad idea because you never know what's going to come. Okay, so New Frontiers in Integrated Nitrogen and Crop Management. I'm going to also give credit to lots of collaborators at Purdue University and to indicate that this topic is by and large going to focus on trying to reduce N2O emissions using an integrated approach. The factors affecting N2O emissions are generally very well known, so physical parameters, moisture and temperature, but there's a lot of management that goes into affecting N2O emissions, including, of course, the various nitrogen source rate, placement and timing, tillage and crop sequence, and so we've published in that area, pH and calcium concentration, and an aspect that we don't spend really nearly enough time on is how much of the fertilizer or manure in actually gets into the plant and how much is released from that decomposing plant, whether it's above ground or below ground. So in this program, we've been monitoring greenhouse gases for the last 5 years. We've published some papers in the area. Basically working in collaboration with the USDA ARS lab, primarily with Doug Smith and Diane Stott. In this, we're primarily looking at single measurements midday to try to capture when the N2O emissions are the highest, and we do so over a 30-minute period. There is a large amount of variability that occurs whenever we do these kinds of measurements. And we've progressed from doing them on a weekly basis to twice a week, and sometimes we try to do even more than that. And there's a lot of spikes and drops. And this is in the comparison, let's say, of four tillage systems in 2013 and data that was put together by Rex Monaday, who's a research scientist in our group, and is going to be presenting a poster tomorrow afternoon. The nitrification inhibitor work that we've also been a part of has been part of essentially looking at, well, what does a nitrification inhibitor really do? And, of course, it affects the and slows down the conversion of ammonium into nitrate. Now, this aspect is well known. In one sense, in the sense that it was part of anhydrous ammonia application systems for at least 30, if not 40 years, but it's more recently been applied to liquid nitrogen fertilizers. And so in our program, we're using an injected instinct application alongside a UEN side dress or preplant or whatever time we want to apply. And in that program, we've also noticed that there can be significant effects due to tillage, as well as the interaction of tillage with the nitrification inhibitor. So again, here's a small program, really, which outlines how complex this is. So for instance, we have a year here where it didn't make any difference whether we applied with the inhibitor in red compared to without the inhibitor in blue for three of the tillage systems. But here with the mole board plow, there's a dramatic reduction in N2O emissions with the nitrification inhibitor in red. And this is part of a bigger system. And so in our group, Rex Amonade has kind of put together a literature review of the last of about 50 studies that looked at with and without nitrification inhibitors. And this gives a frequency distribution in these 50 studies as to whether nitrous oxides were indeed limited or were increased in association with the nitrification inhibitor or with the enhanced efficiency fertilizers. And the average reduction in N2O emissions in these 50 studies was about 30%. So there is something to this. But as I just pointed out, it really matters a lot in what tillage system, in what year, and with what precipitation pattern, and probably on what soil. So the other aspect of reducing N2O is, of course, trying to get more nitrogen into the plant of what you do apply. And in that respect, we've in our group have focused a lot on nitrogen uptake. And so in review papers, We tended to point out how old air hybrids, let's say those prior to 1990, took up a lot less nitrogen in total, but also a lot less nitrogen in the post-silking period than newer air hybrids. And so this is a project that at Purdue University we're continuing, most recently with Sarah Brooks, who will be presenting a poster on this topic this afternoon. So essentially the story is more nitrogen capture, but especially more nitrogen capture later in the season. And if that's the case, then we have even more opportunity to be applying more of our nitrogen later. Those particular review studies have always been done from studies in different places and in different soils with different hybrids. And whenever we look at hybrids over time, when they're done in different years and in different environments, it doesn't mean as much as when you compare those hybrids side by side. So for the last 3 years, we've been involved in a very intensive program funded by Monsanto and Indiana corn producers who essentially look at hybrids from different decades, from 1960 through to 2005, planted side by side at three densities to try to capture both the then current density as well as the current densities with modern high-yielding hybrids at moderate and optimum nitrogen levels. In this program, I'm just going to highlight one example, and the one example is for the extremes in the first 2 years of the study between 2005 hybrids versus a 1975 hybrid, XL72 AA. Basically, the grain yields in this older hybrid are about 2.2 tons less per hectare. The total land uptake is also less by something in the neighborhood of 40 to 50 kilos. And what's really changed as well is how much of that nitrogen was taken up by these more modern hybrids in the post-silking period, basically about 38 versus 30. And we began to look at that trend in even more detail, and there'll be posters presented on that later today, as well as an oral presentation by Karu Chen tomorrow. So the other aspect, of course, is when we look at cropping systems, the hybrids are changing, the nitrogen source is changing, what we're putting on in terms of enhanced efficiency compounds is changing, but we are still stuck with an old technology in most of our research using the GraceNet protocol in terms of actually measuring it. So in the last few years, courtesy of the USDA NEFA project, Richard Grant, an ag meteorologist, and Cliff Johnson, a soil chemist in my group, are looking at the opportunity to use infrared spectrometers as well as tunable diode laser spectrometers, which have a much higher accuracy than anything we are able to do with our syringe and chamber type sampling system, and which allow us to measure emissions every second around the clock. Now, this isn't, going to be able to give us a much more accurate picture, but it won't be able to do so simultaneously on, let's say, 12 or 15 different systems over four applications. These kinds of projects where we're using more detailed instruments like this are only able to, let's say, measure something like four different fields at the same time. So this is just a pictorial of how this is done. We have a trailer basically parked in between two 10-acre fields. We're measuring over basically 100-meter infrared path length. We're refracting it and then looking at the distortion in those infrared rays, and they tell us a lot of information simultaneously about CO2, methane, nitrous oxide, etc. And along with that comes a lot of meteorological measurements, and those meteorological measurements include here on the top in the purple is the wind speed and, of course, the air temperatures. And we have to capture the background levels on the outside of the field in the depending on what direction the wind is actually coming from. And so these kind of give some idea of the fluctuation in background levels of N2O on a diurnal basis, depending on temperature and wind speeds, including one very cool night with almost zero wind speed where we climbed up to about 540 parts per billion on N2O. This is an indication of some of these references that we were able to do when we looked at essentially nitrous oxide emissions, basically in programs where we were applying in the yellow 200 kilograms of anhydrous ammonia versus in the blue 100 or a fall application of 200 kilograms of nitrogen. So it's basically a fall anhydrous versus a spring anhydrous application. And it just shows the extreme amount of variability when we are capturing this using the FTIR as well as the TDL machines. And this is the beauty of these machines is that they'll also capture ammonia at the same time. I think we've got to spend a lot more attention worrying about ammonia emissions rather than just N2O alone. And this machine are really capable of doing that. So in conclusion, the individual technologies to reduce N2O emissions are very unlikely, in my opinion, to make substantial progress. You can't just focus on rate. You can't just focus on nitrification inhibitors. You have to be part of a very well-managed cropping system that has been optimized with good science. There's a lot of scope to reduce N2O emissions now that corn hybrids are taking up more of their nitrogen at later stages. And although the focus should continue to be on reducing yield-scale N2O emissions, we should put a lot more of our focus on looking at the relative crop system effects on recovery, the plant recovery of that nitrogen. And it means a lot more to me when we talk about N2O emissions based on the factor of nitrogen recovery in the plant. And then considering the substantial atmospheric impacts on N2O emissions, we should be putting more of a focus on 24-hour sampling. And although we've continued to look at nitrogen as a greenhouse gas, primarily coming from the soil, a lot more of our future research should consider canopy-derived nitrogen emissions in corn production. And I want to acknowledge the funding as well as the cropping systems group at Purdue that makes all of this possible. Thank you.
Take a couple of
new hybrids are taking out more nitrogen simply because they're producing more biomass and they're achieving higher yields. The percentage of the nitrogen in terms of harvest index really hasn't changed, but they are yielding in some cases 2 tons, some cases 5 tons per hectare more. They're bigger plants, and they are staying green longer. Yes?
Did you see any effect? I know you said the wind speed.
Right.
And rainfall effects in the region.
Right. I didn't report any of that here because that's going to be coming out in our next publication. But yes, there is an impact of rainfall, but the disadvantage of the FTIR machine where you've got this continuous infrared beam that is bouncing back and you're looking at the wave distortions is that you can't operate it while it's raining. Whereas a chamber system, you might be cruel to your employees, but you can send them out there and say, shit, it's raining. Well, big deal, just live with it. But with the FTIR, it's a bit of a problem. Yes? I'm thinking that late in uptake by corn plants means essentially that there's a lot more opportunity to put on smaller amounts early, followed by supplemental amounts later. And that's where we're going with trying to meet the demands of tomorrow's hybrids, is basically, yes, most of the N2O emissions are effectively occurring somewhere between 2 and 4 weeks after.
We can take more questions. After two, three speakers, I think around 11:30.